Forget all the Olympic sports for a moment. The skaters and skis, curling stones and bobsleds. For all of its current troubles mounting the games, the icy wonderland of Sochi, the Black Sea coast and the Caucasus region, is at the center of some of the richest history of the past 500 years. These forthcoming Olympic contests pale in comparison to the battles won and lost, the empires that clashed, and the prizes seized down through history in the Caucasus. And in the epic competition for this region, Russia got the gold medal in the end. For Charles King, professor of international affairs and government at Georgetown University and author of the book The Ghost of Freedom, A History of the Caucasus, Sochi is a window on one of the world's great historical narratives.
The Caucasus was historically a kind of meeting place of empires. It was the place where the Ottoman Empire, the Persian Empire, and the Russian Empire came together. And over the course of the 18th and 19th centuries, really from Peter the Great all the way up through the end of the 19th century, this was a zone of contestation between these three major powers. Russia ended up the winner and ended up controlling the entirety of the Caucasus zone, that is the area north of the Caucasus Mountains and the area south of the Caucasus Mountains.
And what about the Black Sea? What is the significance of the Black Sea? There was always talk during the Cold War that the Russians never had a warm water port and that the Black Sea didn't suffice, but that didn't stop the Black Sea from being an important place for Russians.
Exactly right. The Black Sea itself was a kind of mini Mediterranean. It too was a kind of fracture zone between different imperial powers or between different nation states. By the end of the 18th century, the Russians had come to control most of the northern and eastern portions of the Black Sea, including the area around Sochi, but it remained a kind of fault line during the Cold War. To the south, you had Turkey, which was a member of NATO and the Western Alliance, and around most of the rest of the Black Sea, of course, you had the Warsaw Pact, including the Soviet Union.
Going back to Catherine the Great, now, you know, my history's a little fuzzy here, but I'm counting on you to fill in the details. Is it the case that Catherine the Great launched one of the greatest sort of naval debacles in the history of the universe in the Black Sea against Turkey?
Well, there were a number of very, very difficult naval encounters on the Black Sea throughout history, in fact. The Black Sea has a sort of strange quality to it. Below about 200 meters or so, it's completely dead. So the theory is that, in fact, every ship that ever sank in the Black Sea, every wooden ship is down there somewhere. There aren't any microorganisms that can eat the wood. So it's a very interesting body of water. But in the late 18th century, in one of Catherine's wars, there was a terrible battle that took place on the opposite side of the sea from Sochi, that in fact a very important American took part in it, John Paul Jones.
I remember, yes, he was kind of the hero of that.
He was one of the heroes. He was the a person who, at that stage, having beaten the British in the American Revolution, sold his talents as a sailor to another power, Catherine's Russia, and stood off against the Turks in that battle. He was later on hounded out of the Russian Navy and died a pauper in Paris, and then was later dug up and became an American hero.
So if you're going to the Sochi Olympics, there's no way you can find any John Paul Jones memorabilia anywhere.
No, alas, he didn't leave the Russian Empire in particularly good form, but it's an interesting connection between the United States and that part of the world.
The city itself, Sochi, what significance does it have? Is it a place where, Russian oligarchs and royalty had their dachas, or is it more of a working class, humble city?
Well, Sochi is a rather small city. Now, it's swollen over the last couple of years with the incredible construction that's gone on there and in the outskirts of the city and farther south along the Black Sea coast, where most of the Olympic events will actually take place. But in the Tsarist period, Sochi became a very important resort. The city itself had existed before the Russians came there. An indigenous group called the Circassians had built small settlements around Sochi and other parts of the Black Sea coast. But it became a kind of Russian Riviera, if you like, the place you would go for your summer holidays. And it became that as well during the Soviet period. It was sometimes called part of the Red Riviera, the place where communist bosses and average Soviet citizens would go to enjoy the water in summer and the mountains in winter.
You know, the Russians and the Americans share a questionable legacy in the sense that we don't have a terrifically wonderful record in dealing with indigenous people in our lands. So whether we're talking about Native Americans here or the way the Russians treated people in the Caucasus all the way through to Siberia when they conquered Siberia. Will there be any sense of the people who once lived in these lands, or is it completely overrun by modernity?
Well, I think, of course, the groups that we're talking about who were there before the Russians arrived were indigenous, but perhaps not in the way that word, with the connotations that word has sort of in English. This was a very well-developed local Muslim, literate in many cases, society that progressively was overrun and pushed out, expelled by the Russians as they conquered the Caucasus in the 19th century. So many activists, I think, today are looking to see whether that local culture, which still exists in the North Caucasus, is recognized in the opening ceremonies or what have you. People look at the Vancouver Olympics, for example, when the First Nations of Canada were the official hosts and were the first people to appear in the opening ceremonies. And the question is going to be whether the Russians acknowledge that local culture or not.
Favorite event at the Games that you'll be watching?
The luge, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think is an absolutely insane sport, but you cannot take your eyes off it.
You got a kind of a crazy wild side there, Charles King.
Well, you know, the Caucasus itself is a pretty wild place. And what I hope is that some of that local, bizarre and interesting culture, which is, you know, Russian, but Muslim, Highlander, seafaring, but also mountaineers. It's an amazing mix of different kind of cultural traits. And what I'm hoping is that Russia will acknowledge that side, not just the onion domes and the Kremlin and Red Square, but this other bit of Russia that's equally fascinating.
Charles King, professor of international affairs and government at Georgetown University, author of the book, The Ghost of Freedom, A History of the Caucasus. Thanks so much.
Thank you.